The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're a podcast listener, and this is a podcast ad. Reach great listeners like yourself with podcast advertising from Lips and Ads. Choose from hundreds of top podcasts offering host endorsements, or run a reproduced ad like this one across thousands of shows to reach your target audience with Lips and Ads. Go to lipsandads.com now. That's LIBSYN ads.com.
Welcome to Spirits Podcast, a boozy dive into mythology, legends, and folklore. Every week, we pour a drink and learn about a new story from around the world. I'm Amanda.
And I'm Julia.
And this is episode 85, Brigid and Anya.
Yeah, this is going to be a good one. It's hot as hell here in New York, so we decided to, maybe if we appease the Irish goddesses who are in charge of this season, they will let us not sweat to death.
Yeah, we go through some great fashion ideas, practical fashion ideas, I might add. Learns a little bit more about my ancestral homeland. And, you know, just don't worry about it. It's not pagan. It's fine.
Yep. It's all good. It's all good here.
Also very good and probably look great even when they're super sweaty are our newest patrons, Sarah, Ella, Katie, Anna, Liz, and Emily, as well as our supporting producer level patrons, Philip, Julie, Christina, Josh, Eeyore, Neil, Ashley Marie, Jessica, Maria, Ryan, Phil Fresh, and Deborah.
And they join our amazing legend level patrons who I am shipping out their boxes right now as soon as we're done recording this intro. Sandra, Audra, Mercedes, Jack Marie, Leanne, and Cassie.
Thank you all so much for your support. You allow us to do this show, to publish it for you every single week, and to buy drinks to support our podcasting habit. Jules, what were we drinking this episode?
Frosé, which seems very 2017, I will give our listeners that, but it is also delicious and I don't care.
Yeah, it's it feels like an adult version of shave ice or piraguas,
yeah.
And it's delicious.
I mean, that's basically what it is. It's just shaved ice with frozen rosé or rosé poured on top of, you know what I mean. It's fine.
It's delicious. I also actually made this like bourbon slushy for my 4th of July barbecue last week, where you basically have a bunch like iced tea, lemonade, and orange juice that you freeze together with some whiskey overnight. And then you let it sit on the counter for like 20-ish minutes before you serve it. And it's just like a delicious, slushy, just super drinkable, boozy little beverage.
That sounds amazing. And I would give up my ban on dark liquor to just to try that.
Right on.
In Puerto Rico, we call ourselves Boricua. We are proud, passionate, and full of life. On our island, adventure finds you. Strangers aren't strangers for long. The size of the audience doesn't change the beauty of the music. And we celebrate every last ray of sun.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
This is your moment. Your moment to move forward and make progress. It's time to see where an education can take you. For over 130 years, Strayer University has been at the forefront of change, offering programs that help students like you get ahead and stay ahead so you can keep striving. Visit strayer.edu to learn more. Strayer University is certified to operate in Virginia by CHEV.
Well, we are really stoked about this episode. We do want to let you know that we discuss sexual assault a little bit. So, you know, be mindful and really kind to yourself when deciding, you know, when and if to listen. But without further ado, I hope that you stay cool this week, this summer, and enjoy Spirits Podcast episode 85, Brigid and Onya.
Amanda, it's summer.
It's summer. So hot. It's Julia, so hot.
It's
hot
so very hot. It's
hot
very, very hot.
Balls.
And normally I'm very excited for summer, but it is hot as balls currently. So I thought when I was writing this episode that we would be celebrating summer. But at this point, I kind of don't want to. But I do want to still celebrate some enthusiasm over two things that we both love. And that is summertime.
Yeah.
And Irish goddesses.
Woohoo!
I know, coming back around. Specifically, this episode, we are going to be talking about Brigid, the goddess of spring, fertility, healing, poetry, and smithcraft, as well as Onya, who is the Irish goddess of summer, wealth, and sovereignty.
All the things that I love. Good choices.
I know. I do my best, just for you.
Lots of Irish people are given, like, patron saint medals, like saint medals of either St. Patrick or St. Brigid. Often they'll like gender that based on the kid, if it's like for your communion or your confirmation or something. And I have a St. Brigid medal, so I'm excited to learn more about the goddess.
I think you're going to be very happy with that medal because she is pretty metal herself. Oh,
wow. Syncretism pun.
So we're going to actually start with Brigid because, you know, spring goes into summer and then we can finish with Onya. So get to like
idea.
Chronological. Wow. So first, Brigid, her name means the exalted one. And that is derived from a proto-Celtic briganti, which means high one. I did do a lot of research for the pronunciation for this. So hopefully it's somewhat close to being right.
Irish
I can only hope.
Don't at us.
Don't at
us,
me.
Please. Listen,
I'm doing
listen,
my
folks.
Best.
Real talk for a moment. Making this podcast is a labor of love. We hope it's going to be our jobs one day, but we put our heart and souls into making it, editing it, posting it, you know, promoting it, trying to get money, keeping all the stuff organized, answering your many beautiful emails and tweets and Facebook messages. And we do our very best. So when we get substantial things wrong, when you think we could be doing better, when we could learn something for the future, you know, we are happy to hear it in a nice way. But if we mispronounce a word that is never going to come up again in any other episode, trust that someone's already told us. Love you, bye.
Yes. It also seems as though it might have come from a high German name called Burgund, and the Sanskrit word Birhanti, which means high, and it's an epithet of the Hindu dawn goddess Ushas.
So, I love when Sanskrit gets up in there. We always talk about Sanskrit shows up and you know it's a party. It's like the person that shows up to your party with like gin and juice.
Yeah,
Sanskrit is like this is gonna be the night now.
Yep. No, it's Sanskrit. When Sanskrit shows up, you know that things are gonna get crazy.
Side note, I got a like strawberry guava fruit juice, not carbonated, just fruit juice, from a poke place in my neighborhood the other day. And girl, it was adult high C. I want to add some gin and or vodka to that real bad.
Pick some up for the next time I'm at your house, please.
I sure will.
According to the Book of the Taking of Ireland, which is a collection of poems and prose that give the history of Ireland and the Irish from the world to the Middle Ages, and it was compiled in the 11th century. So according to all that, Brigid is the daughter of the Dagtha, who is the father figure and god of fertility, agriculture, manliness, strength, and appetite.
Not even saying like strength, straight up manliness. Strength
straight
also,
up manliness.
But like, that's very funny.
Yeah. And her mother was a mortal poet. So far so good. Yep.
This sounds like self-insert fanfic, but I'm down for it.
Legitimately sounds like you. So it's already a really good start. She's said to have had two oxen, has the king of the boars and the king of the sheep.
Just as like her friends, consorts?
Yeah. So she's just like out there keeping a bunch of livestock royalty, which makes sense because she is the goddess of fertility and spring and whatnot.
Yeah.
Also because of this, considered the guardian of domesticated animals.
I'm getting some vibes of, what was the older sister in Chronicles of Narnia?
Susan.
Susan. My head was saying Susan. Sarah. I'm getting some Susan vibes up in here.
Mm-hmm. Damn right. So she is the patroness of poetry, smithing, medicine, arts and crafts, sacred wells, and of course, the arrival of spring.
Let's pause on sacred wells.
Mm-hmm.
Please tell me more.
I don't have a lot more, but there are sacred wells. Like, you know how we were talking about with the Laomai? There's just like sacred rocks and stuff like that just around.
This is true.
It's like there, as long as there's a like piece of the land that has significance to the community around it, it's probably going to be sacred in some way.
All right, fair enough. I just love that idea that she's like, yeah, I got arts and crafts. I got domestic stuff. I got animals. I got sacred wells, man.
Sacred
I get to give
wells.
Some sweet wells.
Give you that good water.
I mean, and in a world where we have not learned how to treat water, or even that water could be contaminated in bad ways, like, there are probably real reasons for it to be like, that well is okay.
Yeah. So according to Lady Augusta Gregory, Brigid is, quote, a woman of poetry, and poets worshipped her, for her sway was very great and very noble. And she was a woman of healing along with that, and a woman of smith's work, and it was she that made the first whistle for calling one to another through the night.
Damn.
Which, like, okay, I don't know really what that last part means exactly, but now I'm dubbing her the, like, goddess of cell phones and late night booty calls, because I think that's kind of what we're talking about here.
Yeah.
I know that's not it, but...
Was, like, pre-industrial Ireland having, like, flutes that you would trade with your beloved so that you would, like, carve matching flutes or something and then be able to, like, call at each other in the nighttime?
That's
Was that
kind of
the
adorable.
Proto-booty call?
I like that a lot.
Damn.
That's really cute. She is said to be the Celtic equivalent of the Roman Minerva or the Greek Athena, especially since both versions of the goddess embody this idea of an elevated state, which is either physical or psychological.
Nice.
So this even goes into the physical realm. So she is considered the goddess of all things high. So high rising flames, the highlands, hill forts, upland areas. And then it also goes into the psychological realm. Wisdom, excellence, perfection, high intelligence, poetic eloquence, craftsmanship, healing ability, druidic knowledge, and even skill in warfare.
This is amazing. I also love that domestic animals are in her purview because they are like the highest of the animals as far as mm-hmm. humans are concerned. You know, like they're cultivated such that they really fulfill our needs because that's how human beings kind of see the environment. It's like, mm-hmm. does it help me? Yes, no. But oh my God, this is so cool. And I'm getting real like capital R romantic vibes here. Mm-hmm. Like in my literature degree, you know, whenever we talked about romanticism with a capital R, it's like Byron and Keats and Shelley and all these poets that wrote about like, oh, by suffering, but also beauty and like mm-hmm. the sublime. The first time that I kind of studied that phrase and that phase of literature, my professor put up on her slides a painting of Byron just like standing on a hillside, like looking out over.
I know exactly which one you're talking about too.
It's like the textbook image literally of the sublime. And this is very much the vibe that I'm getting of Brigid just like in a beautiful like frock or something standing on the hillside with like smart sheep at her feet, like a book of poetry being like, yes, this is mine.
I love it. That's a good image. Someone make it for us, please, if it's not already out there. So she's the goddess of high things. It's the reason why she's called the exalted one or the high one. And I kind of like, in my head, I'm just like, she's the goddess of getting super high. It's just where my head went.
Elevated states, man.
Elevated states. So she is also attributed with the invention of keening. Which for people who don't know what that is, it is the combination of weeping and singing. So she invented this while mourning her son after he was slain while fighting the Fomorians.
I mean, it is an artful form of mourning. I see it.
Yeah, I'm going to post a example of keening in the show notes because it's kind of like a weird thing if you haven't ever heard of it before.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, I could see myself laughing uncomfortably, you know, like, if I first learn of it, especially, or see it. But I usher at an Irish theater here in New York City, like, for fun to go see plays and hang out with, like, old Irish folks that remind me of my grandparents. And there was a play that involved keening. And like it happened in a scene during the show. And it was so profoundly moving. Like, if it had been described to me, I would have, you know, kind of probably laughed nervously. But it was super profound. So definitely
nice.
A thing that's worth learning about.
So Brigid is probably most well known now because during the Middle Ages, she was syncretized with the Christian saint, Saint Brigid.
There she is.
There she is. Supposedly, Christian monks took the ancient figure of the mother goddess and grafted her name and functions onto her Christian counterpart, Saint Brigid of Kildare. So this is according to the medievalist Pamela Berger. So she is associated with perpetual sacred flames to the point where, this is really interesting, one is maintained by 19 nuns in her sanctuary of Kildare, Ireland. So supposedly this flame is pretty badass. According to some writers in the Middle Ages, the flame is surrounded by a hedge that no man can cross.
Whoa.
If a man attempts to cross the hedge, they say they are said to become cursed, either by going insane, dying, or being horrifically injured to the hope where they cannot be healed.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. And like, not to be too heteronormative here, but I love that this is like, this is the woman's man cave. Like, this is where women can go to like fucking be chill for a minute. And like, it's quiet and no one needs me. And there's no kids and there's no errands and there's no animals to be tended to. And we can all like sit here and fucking read or nap or pray.
By the fireplace.
By the fireplace. It's pretty. There's a hedge. There's privacy. We can like undo our corsets. Like we can just be here for a minute.
I like that. So this is actually extremely similar to Vesta or Hestia in Roman/Greek mythology, and this kind of similar general worship of the hearth goddess. In the Roman Catholic Church, St. Brigid's Day is February 1st, which is the same day as the Gaelic Day of Worship for Brigid, the goddess. So this day was selected because it is the halfway point between the winter solstice and the spring equinox.
Huh.
Another fun fact about St. Brigid, which got me all excited, is that she is an expert dairy woman and brewer, and is said as one of her miracles to have turned water into beer.
Hot damn! God, I didn't think she could get any better, and here we are.
I know. Our final part is probably one of my favorite things, and this actually got tweeted at us by listener Amy, which I didn't know about, and Amy kind of opened my eyes to it, and I was really excited about it. But several medieval biographies mention that some of her miracles, St. Brigid's miracles, included divine abortions, described by sources as penance for sins and treated as relatively minor offenses.
Huh. Wow, I don't even know how to wrap my head around that.
Yeah. So let me tell you the story and then we can maybe discuss it a little bit more.
Sure.
All right. So in the story, St. Brigid is said to have become a nun because she was arranged to be married, but she refused and then prayed to God that her beauty would be taken away from her so that no man would want to marry her. They're not very clear, but apparently that works because she takes this newfound independence and she becomes a nun in order to work with the sick and poor. So the aforementioned miracle is outlined by Cogidesis, and it occurred when a young woman had broken her vow of chastity. In some versions, it's a nun herself and became pregnant. And here's the direct quote from the source. Brigid, exercising with her strength of her most ineffable faith, blessed her, caused the fetus to disappear without coming to birth and without pain. She faithfully returned the woman to health and to penance.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is a lot.
Mm-hmm. So Cogidesis was an Irish monk and a writer who lived about 650. That was around where he was at. So he was one of the monks of Kildare, and so he has the oldest written record of the life of St. Brigid. And it's actually kind of a controversy because some people said that he might have actually been related to her.
Really?
In some way, like a cousin of some sort. So he's supposed to be a contemporary with her.
Wow. Well, this obviously has a lot of like complex implications for Catholic theology, mm-hmm. especially, you know, when deciding to sanctify somebody. You know, you like, from what I understand, the church kind of like takes the, you know, some of their life and the some of their miracles and like decides how it goes. And so it's like, that's just such an interesting fact or claim that it's one of those things that makes me realize that people in history were people also, and mm-hmm. like people dealt with similar situations that we deal with now, only with different or fewer resources. And I can't imagine the kind of like groundbreaking, shit stirring, you know, like life defending and altering kind of people like had to deal with stuff like this back then.
Yeah, it's really interesting, and I kind of want to leave the implications of it sort of open-ended for our listeners, but I think it's a really interesting fact, and it's one that you can't really ignore about the goddess and about the saint, because they're like so woven into the history of who they are.
Absolutely. And putting to the side for a minute the kind of like Catholic saint and Catholic implications, because I'm sure there is a lot there and a lot of people have very strong opinions. As a goddess, again, like everything about Brigid kind of implies like mastery over nature, whether it's brewing, it's agriculture, it's, you know, arts and crafts, which is like elevating, you know, kind of raw materials to a higher form, domestic animals, things like that. Control over your reproductive cycle, control over, you know, things that would otherwise happen to you passively. Like that is an elevation and an evolution too. So
yeah,
it is very, wow.
Yeah, it's a lot there. There's a lot to unpack for sure. Now that we've settled up with spring, let's head over to summer.
I'm down.
So summertime, Amanda. That is
summertime in the
time.
City. Someone in a rush next to someone looking pretty.
Excuse me, miss. I know it's not funny, but your perfume smells like your daddy's got money. Okay, sorry.
my partner has not seen Hamilton or listened to it, and yet that song is like verbatim a part of our vernacular now because I quote it so much.
That's adorable. So summertime, that is Anya's time. So Anya's name derives from the word that means brightness or radiance, as well as splendor, glory, and fame.
All right. That's
We're really killing it on the name game here. So we'll start with the fact that Celtic legends say that she is the daughter of Jochaver, who was a member of the Tuatha De Danann, which is one of the mythological races of Ireland. So they are basically the main deities that existed in pre-Christian Ireland, and their pantheon is said to dwell in the, quote, other world, but would interact with humans and the humans' world from time to time.
Got it. So I'm getting a little bit of a, like, Zeus before he fucked up a lot of stuff vibe, where the gods are, like, they're around kind of parallel, but not involved necessarily in human affairs.
Later, Christian records would depict them as kings, queens, heroes, rather than deities, because non-deifying former deities is just what
Christianity
does.
Lol, it's not pagan,
does.
It's fine.
Yep, lol, it's not pagan, it's fine. So it seems that Jochaver is another name for Dagda, which we talked about before being the father figure of Brigid. And he seems to also be the father figure. And again, he is the god of fertility, agriculture, manliness, strength, and appetite.
Oh, manliness.
I love the appetite part. That's kind of fun.
I know.
Anya is also considered in many stories to be the wife of the sea god, Mon-an-on Muckler.
She fucked with a sea god.
Yeah. And in other stories that she's his daughter. But this is one of those instances where the family trees are corrupted because they're being retold through a Christian lens.
Yeah, for sure.
Side note, Mon-an-on Muckler is actually a pretty cool god. He had a boat called Wave Sweeper. He had a water boat chariot. And he had this powerful sword called the Answerer and a cloak of invisibility. And I see you, J.K. Rowling. I know what's up.
Are we sure this is not a Gary Sue self-insert fanfic?
It kind of feels like it, doesn't it?
Wave Sweeper? The Answerer?
Yeah, the Answerer is a pretty fucking cool name for a sword.
It is like so badass, it's almost corny, but I am here for it.
Okay, if you had a sword...
Yes.
What would you name your sword?
Oh boy.
No, I kind of sprung this one on you, but get ready for it.
You know, my first thought was like the lady killer, but I don't want to kill ladies. I want to like make them be like, damn girl, she fine. So
maybe, your sword's name is Damn Girl, She Fine.
It would be the like, where'd you get that shirt? Or something like that would be my ideal situation is the sword makes someone be like, damn, where'd you get that? Or thanks, it has pockets. That's my sword's name.
Oh fuck, no, that's so good. Oh, I love that.
My scabbard would have pockets.
It's a pocket. Your scabbard is a pocket.
It's in your dress. Has pockets. Oh fuck, we did it. Dress with the scabbard in it.
We figured it out.
There it is. We're done.
It's like one of those, it's like a bag of holding, except it holds my sword.
Yeah, or like a cane sword, only instead it's like the boning, like a nice A-line skirt, you know what I mean? And the sides, the hems, that is where the scabbard is.
I'm so happy right now. You've made my day.
We're going to be millionaires. So we figured it out.
We figured it out. We just got to bring back swords.
Thanks, it has swords.
Thanks, it has swords. It's got one good sword. It actually came with the sword. How cool is that?
How cool is that? You can fit it right in there. Look, you can't even see.
Moving back on to Summer and Anya. One of the more important titles of Anya is the fact that she's known as the Queen of the Fairies.
Hell yes.
So the Feast of Midsummer Night is thrown in her honor. This association also ties her to the goddess Grian, and they might, according to some sources, share a dual goddess seasonal function role, which is really interesting.
Meaning they share summer versus winter?
Yeah, so the goddesses are said to represent the two suns of the year. So Anya represents the light half of the year and the bright summer sun, while Grian represents the dark half of the year and the pale winter sun. Like, you know how it's wintertime and you can kind of see that sort of, like, veil of light? Like, the light is different during the winter.
Hell yeah.
And the Irish were like, I know what that is. That's a different goddess.
Different sun. I mean, it feels that way, right? Like, how mm-hmm. can it be the same sun in the sky and yet it is so much less warm?
Yeah, no, I really like that. I think it's super interesting. I really enjoy, and we talked about this with Biavi, and we talked about this a couple of times. I really like when early human beings, like, kind of understand astrophysics a little bit.
Yeah, in the Mermaids episode, too, we referenced it, where I think I just said, like, I love when people describe weather. Like, I love when exactly as you say, like, our ancestors pretty much got it in a way that is, like, mind-blowing.
Or like when Batala was like, oh, the sky is cold above the earth. The sky is cold.
Yes, it is. It is cold.
How did you know that?
I know. So
how did you figure that out? It's amazing.
I know. Anyway. Other times I see humans like forget random things or like try really, really hard to open a lock where the key was upside down the whole time. And I'm just like, how did we get here? How did we make it?
How did we figure out like stars and the sun and the earth exist in the ways that they do? I don't understand. Anyway, so as this sun goddess, Anya could take the shape of a red mare that no one could outrun and use this form in order to walk among the Irish people.
Yes.
Like a better Kelpie.
Exactly. Lawful good Kelpie.
So the hill that is associated with Anya is Knockaney in the County Limerick. And it is actually located right next to the hill of the goddess Grian.
Hey. So
they're twinsies. It's very cute.
Neighbors.
So Anya became the queen of the fairies once the Christians came into the picture. This is attached to stories where she had relationships with human men, and this supposedly led to the birth of this magical fey human race.
Wow.
So probably the most important story of Anya is how she became known as the goddess of sovereignty, because I love good a sovereignty story.
Yeah.
So the story is about the story of Alil Olam, who was, according to Irish traditional history, the king of the southern half of Ireland. So in the story, he discovered that the grass in his fields just would not grow. And without the grass, there could be no cattle, and then his people would starve.
Yeah.
So he approached a druid who told him to go to Knockaney, which was then known as the Hill of Anya, on Samhain Eve. So the king did as he was told, but when he arrived on the hill, he became drowsy and fell into this kind of half-sleep, during which he saw a vision of Anya.
Never sleep on a fairy mound.
Anya was so beautiful that the king was, quote, overcome with desire and forced himself upon the goddess. Don't do that. Just don't fucking do that. Like, so the assault ended only when Anya bit off Eliel's ear, earning him the moniker Olam, or One-Eared, because ancient Irish law dictated that only a, quote, unblemished person could rule. By maiming him, Anya had rendered him unfit to be king, and in that moment became the embodiment of sovereignty, able to grant and remove a man's power to rule.
Wow.
This yeah, there's some, a like, lot of implications there.
This is some like Medusa levels of reclaiming agency from like a place of complete, you know, victimization.
Yeah. Yeah. It's really, really interesting. For the record, the descendants of Olam also claim to be the descendants of Anya as well. Again, because of that whole nonsense. There is another story in which Anya is the wife of a man called Gerald Fitzgerald. Ireland, okay. Who is also known as the third Earl of Desmond, because why not? So he was an actual guy who lived between 1335 and 1398 and was known as Gerald the Poet.
Adorable. He sounds British. What county was he in?
I have no idea. But I think this is one of those instances where during that period, the British had invaded Ireland.
Yeah.
And they were trying to create like claims to the land, which is why he's associated with an Anya story.
Yeah, or he could be natively Irish but had the like title of Earl kind of imposed on him when the British came and was like, "This is mine now." And we were like, "No."
Yeah, basically. So in a version of the story, again, he rapes Anya rather than having a consensual marriage, and she exacts revenge on him by turning him into a goose, and in some stories, killing and eating him.
Wow.
Yep. So this is supposed to be a retelling of the original story of Olam, but the retelling in this version is given a more French continental-inspired twist with the goose ending. Because, you know, France, they just, like, turn people into birds and stuff like that.
They love it. They love it. Russia loves their bird husbands, and France loves their, oops, not your dinner, goose.
You're adorable. So this story is also said to have roots in the fact that the Fitzgerald family was originally Norman, and in order to claim ties to Ireland, they invented this mythos being related to the goddess of sovereignty in order to justify their leadership. This yes. is, like, some early on, like, doctorate, like, Sun King bullshit, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and my mind flashed right away to kind of like corporate culture, because in the giant investment banks, like the one where I started my career, they frequently like buy other companies all the time. And there are people who work in the like acquisitions department of giant corporations whose job is to think about like meshing corporate culture. And how do you talk to the employees? How do you like spin that story to the public? And that idea of like inventing narrative and finding provenance and like, in you know, inventing a way that these two things can peacefully coexist reminds me exactly of this, where some people sat around in, you know, a like palatial, you know, sub chamber in mm-hmm. France and said like, okay, well, how can we, you know, soothe this transition and make this as smooth as possible? And humans are going to human.
And I think that's really interesting, because when you consider Irish mythology as a whole and you consider the movement from pre-Christian mythology to Christian mythology, this like becomes such a powerful play in their book, is taking one thing that they like and has benefits, and instead of turning it evil like we see a lot of the times, like the lull, it's not pagan, it's fine, we see them turn it into something that they can use in order to dominate the culture, you know what I mean?
Yeah. And in a, you know, in a more serious note, like that is gaslighting. Like it's, you know, psychologically abusive yeah. to use something, some kernel of truth about a person or a culture or whatever, and use that as like the grit in the oyster to like make a pearl.
Yeah. And like kind of finishing up this episode with a little bit more discussion. Mostly I like the idea that our Western god and goddesses like can cross over with each other. So we see a lot of the same stories because either they're spreading to people like from another source, or we're just seeing people having similar human experiences. And I like that when that's the case, because there's always these things that are quite specific to a region that they're coming from. So like in the case of Brigid being similar to Athena and Minerva, but because she has such like this very regional specific thing, she has like control over the highlands. She invented keening. It reminds me of this thing that I used to like talk about when I was doing food writing a lot. It's called terroir. It's the taste of place. So it's the flavor that is distinct to that region. And usually it applies to stuff like cheese and wine and meat. But the idea that something is so distinct to a place that it makes it entirely unique from other things that are similar to it it's formed from the land and the people itself to create something familiar, but also entirely new. And I liked both of these goddesses because I feel like they fall into that area of terroir. It's really, really interesting.
I'm just sitting here grinning because this is one of my absolute favorite subjects. And I love that you use this lens to kind of tie them together. You know, as a person, I felt like I was really raised on the internet, you know, and I think both of us had this experience of, you know, finding communities online and like seeing parts of ourselves, discovering parts of ourselves that we couldn't kind of get out elsewhere online. Maybe me a little more than you because you like played outside and stuff.
Yeah, sometimes.
A little bit. But I like rediscovered when I went to college the fact that like I was from a place and I lived in a place, and those places weren't just like the, you know, the like where all my clothes were before I traveled somewhere else, or my like meat space when I was not, you know, living my life online. But there were positives to that, and like there are things that are true of like our hometown and our upbringing that aren't true of others. And like I kind of learned to appreciate those things when I like traveled a little bit and studied abroad and like lived outside of our hometown. Like those are now some of my favorite things. As much as I love the internet, I love this community, you know, I love all the ways in which the web lets us live lives that are bigger than just where we are. You know, it's a real privilege that I'm able to really see the fact that, you know, having a community supported agriculture share this summer means that I am eating vegetables that were grown like 10 miles away from where I live. Mm-hmm. And I get to like shake hands with a farmer. I get to like go pick strawberries on the farm. I get to like have like a New York State radish that I could not get anywhere else. And there's something really exciting and nerdy about that.
Yeah.
So that is very much like the kind of taste of summer for me. Like farmers markets are one way that you can really, you know, put an actual like tangible connection to something that is otherwise hard to find.
Yeah, no, I really appreciate that. And I think that that kind of lends itself to this idea that much like our goddesses and much like our culture, we are shaped by the place that we're born and shaped by the communities that we're built in. And like, yeah. I really appreciate that because I think a lot of times, I think a lot of times our generation kind of give our hometowns a bad rep. You know what I mean?
Especially those of us raised in suburbia.
Right, for sure. And we want to see so much more. But like, you know, I've spent a lot of time talking with people who, because of the internet and because like our friend groups kind of expand, who like weren't born and weren't raised in the same like kind of community that we are, and you start noticing the differences, and it's really interesting, and you start thinking like, oh, not everyone grew up with that weird commercial that everyone always quotes back in my hometown, or oh, not everyone grew up with that like chain of food places that we would go to at like 2 a.m. after tech rehearsals and stuff like that. And it's really interesting to kind of think about, hey, I am unique because of how I was created and how I was formed. And like, I have this unique experience that no one else outside of this community is going to have. And it's really, really interesting and really cool. And I feel like that's such a human experience. And I think that we kind of take it for granted and we don't appreciate it enough.
Yeah. And like, you know, this is sappy, but one of the great joys of my life is having a friendship with you and with Jake and with my brother and sister, and my other little brother, all of them, because you know, the five of you like understand me and my origin in a way that no one else does. Like, not my other friends of 10 plus years, like not my partner, not people who grew up outside of where we grew up. And you know, we kind of often say that like you and I are kind of each other's like only close friend from our, you know, kind of upbringing in elementary school and all of that. But I'm so glad that I have you because as much as like, you know, I tried for a while to distance myself from that past, like there are ways in which our hometown, you know, is messed up and has stuff to learn. And there are, you know, ways that we try to better ourselves and to unlearn, you know, some of the patriarchy and racism and homophobia and heteronormativity that we were raised in. But like, that is the flavor of life. And like, as you know, it's not going to go away. And all we can do is like make peace with where we came from and decide what we want to keep, decide what we want to toss, be like, well, it's not pagan, it's fine. And I don't know, I'm really glad to have you, and I'm really glad to have this through line of friendship, so that we can always kind of, some part of us like resonates in the matching part of each other that shares that terroir. I don't know how to pronounce
terroir.
That word.
Terroir. It's weird in French. It's fine. I appreciate you, and I appreciate you having in my life, and I'm definitely not crying right now. It's totally fine.
Oh, babe.
But I'm just glad that like the way that we were raised and the people that we became worked so well with each other. And I'm glad that we get to do this project, and it makes me really happy. And I'm so glad that we get to share those experiences and the experiences of the communities that we get to talk about with our listeners. And I really appreciate that. And this is like a really, like a very thankful podcast at the end of this, but I do really appreciate the time that we get to spend with all of our listeners and with each other talking about new and exciting things in our lives and in the lives of like human beings in general. It's very cool. It's very awesome. And I'm glad to be here.
I know. Summertime is a time to sit in the sunshine and eat some really good food and drink some really good drinks and say like, this is okay sometimes. And that's what this podcast feels like to me.
It absolutely is. And remember, listeners, to stay creepy.
Stay cool.
Seriously, though, stay cool. It's
seriously
really hot.
Hydrate,
out.
Please. Go to a cooling center if you have asthma. Don't go outside. Bye.
No. Bye.
Spirits was created by Amanda McLaughlin, Julia Schaffini, and Eric Schneider, with music by Kevin MacLeod and visual design by Allison Wakeman.
Keep up with all things creepy and cool by following us at Spirits Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and Tumblr. We also have all of our episode transcripts, guest appearances, and merch on our website, as well as a form to send us your urban legends at spiritspodcast.com.
Join our member community on Patreon, patreon.com/spiritspodcast, for all kinds of behind-the-scenes stuff. Just $1 gets you access to audio extras with so much more available too. Recipe cards, director's commentaries, exclusive merch, and real physical gifts.
We are a founding member of Multitude, a collective of independent audio professionals. If you like Spirits, you will love the other shows that live on our website at multitude.productions.
And above all else, if you liked what you heard today, please share us with your friends. That is the very best way to help us keep on growing.
Thank you so much for listening. Till next time.